This episode of Market Talk is brought to you by Growmark FS. Keeping up on the latest in ag is a challenge, to say the least, but there are experts nearby ready to help. You'll find them at your local FS. You can trust them to bring you customized agronomic grain and energy solutions born of the latest thinking. That's because FS specialists receive continuous training that keeps them current on the latest trends, practices, and technologies. So you'll get local expertise that's both exceptional and up-to-date. Visit fssystem.com to learn how FS is bringing you what's next.
Bringing you the ag information you need. This is Market Talk, produced by the American Ag Radio Network. Now, here's your host, Jesse Allen.
Wheat markets move sharply lower on the Ukraine grain export deal being signed, with soybeans doing their best to hold strength and corn largely caught in the middle today. Welcome into Market Talk. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. Appreciate you being here with us and making us part of your day once again today. A lot of news in the market trade as we head to the weekend, headlined by that Ukraine grain export deal, as the Ukraine and Russia signed a landmark deal here today to reopen Ukrainian Black Sea ports for grain exports, raising hopes that an international food crisis aggravated by the Russian invasion can be erased. After much anticipation, the deal signed here today to allow grain exports and other agricultural products out of Ukraine ports. Over 2 months of negotiations, including Russia, Ukraine, Turkey, and the UN, were needed, but the estimated 20 million metric tons of grain stuck in Ukraine's ports now have the opportunity to help alleviate food shortages in the Middle East and Africa, make space for Ukraine farmers' current crops, and provide a boost to the decimated Ukrainian economy. Now, the ports included in the deal are reportedly Odessa, which is Ukraine's number one port for grain exports, as well as nearby Chmamorsk to the west and Yuzhny to the east. Now, notably, the major port of Mykolaiv was left out of the deal, potentially because of its proximity to the current front lines. Mykolaiv has also sustained considerable damage to its export facilities. Mykolaiv has seen that damage in recent months from the continued Russian strikes. Although optimism abounds right now, it is worth noting that even though a deal has been signed on paper, it will still be some time before any grain actually moves, and there's plenty that could change before that happens. Now, there is reports from a few senior UN officials. According to a Reuters report, they expect the exports to be fully operational in a few weeks, and shipments will be restored to pre-war levels within a few weeks, according to two senior UN officials here on Friday. There will also be a checkpoint in Istanbul from with Turkey kind of overseeing the shipments coming out, and also officials from both sides. So there's a lot of moving parts to this deal and still a lot of unknown. And of course, it all comes down to whether or not Russia continues to uphold their end of the bargain. As we see, on the same day that this deal signed, reports have begun to surface of Russia sending in combines to occupied areas of Kherson as well as other parts of southeast Ukraine to help with equipment shortages. This is after multiple confirmed reports of Russian forces previously stealing old crop grain stocks from occupied areas of southern and eastern Ukraine and exporting them through their ports in Crimea. With this going on, Russia saw Vicon earlier in the week raise their 2022 Russian wheat production estimate once again to what would be a new record of 90.9 million metric tons. Now, also, of course, with continued shelling and intensifying of the war in parts of Ukraine between Russia and Ukraine, one has to wonder what's going to happen with this deal as we move forward. But the trade today, trading the here and now, deal signed, and a lot of the computers and algo trading reading the headlines, and that helped to push the wheat markets lower here today in all three complexes. We pretty much taken out the war premium and then some here, led down by Chicago wheat. As we got Chicago wheat back into the sevens, the mid sevens here, with KC wheat, spring wheat in the eights. So definitely taking a lot of premium out of the wheat market. Meantime, today, corn largely caught in the middle, didn't really know what way to go, whether to follow the wheat markets or soybeans, which found some strength with bean oil higher today. I talked earlier in the session with Mark Lucas of StoneX about midday after the Ukraine grain deal was signed. Got his thoughts on some of the price action here today. We start our conversation talking about that Ukraine grain deal and how that seemed to be the catalyst to move lower in the wheat markets today. We also discussed the weather forecast coming up for the weekend into next week, which is cooler and wetter for many folks in the Corn Belt who are starting to see drought stress. So let's listen back to those comments with Mark Lucas of StoneX, get his thoughts on those topics here on the day today.
It sure is. And, you know, I think a lot of the people in the market kind of felt like I did coming into this, that, you know, we've talked about this for a couple months now and nothing ever really came to fruition. And today they actually did it. So the market's reacting accordingly. You know, we don't have all the details, and like most of these kinds of things, the devil's kind of in the details. Certainly it's a step in the right direction, and certainly going to help Ukraine get some of the wheat out. Yet on the other hand, if Turkey's going to have to oversee all the shipments and so forth as a neutral third party, it, you know, likely is going to slow things down and so forth. But it's certainly a step in the right direction. And the wheat markets, you look at a chart, and we just took it right back down to where we were prior to the Russian invasion. If you look at a KC chart or something, you know, today we're right back there to levels that we have not seen since we've had one day last week, but prior to that, you know, it was back in early February when we traded these levels. So,
well, a lot to watch on the wheat markets. On the flip side, soybeans doing their best to hold some strength here today with good strength of bean oil, and corn largely caught in the middle between the two. Not sure which way to go, follow soybeans or follow wheat. That seems to be the case, especially with this weather forecast coming up this weekend, continuing to look cooler and wetter for many, and I know that's a weight on the markets as well.
Correct. And I think on the corn side of things, with this cooler forecast and some moisture, you know, we're at that reproductive stage here that, you know, the market's saying, hey, this is just perfect timing really to get that type of relief. So, you know, I think the corn market's done a lot of damage here off the highs, and, you know, we're back down to lows from early in January, really. You know, the bean side of things, well, you know, we're not that far into the reproductive part of it. That's, they always say the corn's made in July and the beans are made in August. So I think they're going to keep a little risk premium probably in the beans here for a while, just because, you know, that's still ahead of us here yet.
And again, that's comments with Mark Lucas of StoneX in for Arlen Suderman here today, talking about that deal signed with Ukraine grain exports, as well as the weather forecast and just some of the price action in the market trade today. And again, a big weight on the wheat market today is this Ukraine grain deal. It'll be interesting to see how this all looks as we move forward here and move into the month of August and maybe get some of these exports out of Ukraine. But our market's definitely feeling the brunt of the news today, moving lower in Chicago, KC, and Minneapolis wheat. Now, again, bean oil seeing a decent rebound here heading into the weekend. That helped to hold up the soybean market today, with corn, again, largely caught in the middle. We're going to talk about all of this and more coming up here with Chad Hart of Iowa State University. He's an economist there at ISU, ag economist. He's going to join us to talk about the markets and look at this Ukraine, Russia, UN, Turkey grain export deal, look at the weather, talk about what he's here for farmers across the country, and much more. That's coming up here in segment 2 and 3. We're also going to have a conversation later in the show about the fertilizer market, those duties on imports coming from Russia and Trinidad and Tobago, that case with the ITC being thrown out here earlier this week. We're going to talk about that and more coming up with Josh Linville, Vice President of Fertilizer at StoneX, at the end of today's show. But coming up next, Chad Hart with Iowa State University. We'll be back with more market talk on the way right after this.
Market information that matters to you on Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And joining us now to talk about the market trade as we wrap up the week and head to the weekend, let's say hello to our good friend Chad Hart with Iowa State University, economist there joining us today. Chad, always a pleasure to catch up with you, sir. How are you?
All right, doing well. How are you?
I am good, Chad. Thanks for the time, as always. You know, grain markets have changed quite a bit since the last time we talked here a couple of months back, Chad. We've seen a lot of premium come out of these markets. And, you know, looking at things wrapping up the week, plenty of news out there to discuss. I think top of mind, just to start, this UN brokered, Turkey brokered deal between Ukraine and Russia to get grain exports out of Ukraine being signed today. That seemed to be the reason for a late day sell-off Thursday. And then the wheat markets trading lower on Friday for the most part due to that deal, I think, being signed as well. So as you look at that news, Chad, what do you expect from this deal and its impact on the market?
Well, that's the deal. Signing this deal definitely does, let's create a news story that says, okay, the global feed markets are going to see a bit more supply coming out of the Black Sea region. I think the proof will be in the pudding. How long does this deal stay in place? How long does it last? But at least for now, what it's doing is it's providing some pricing relief to the global markets, giving some buyers out there, especially as we look at our international feed buyers, this gives them an opportunity to slide in and buy some relatively cheaper feed product, especially wheat, as we look out there, knowing full well that a deal like this, like I say, can disappear in a hurry, and we could see these prices rebound when, if this deal does fall apart in the future.
Well, I think, you know, watching things, I know there's it's two sides of the coin, right? There's a lot of skepticism from folks in the trade, farmers, ranchers, you know, watching the markets saying, well, okay, how long is it going to take to demine the ports? Who's going to insure these ships, et cetera, et cetera? Will Russia uphold its end of the bargain? And then on the flip side, you have computers and algo traders reading the headline and trading the headline. And that's, you know, I think a case of the battle that we're seeing here to wrap up the week, and we'll probably continue to see, Chad.
Well, but I would argue that's always been the battle within the markets. I mean, everybody is basically trying to be, if you can, one step ahead of the market, because you know that person that can be one step ahead of the market is likely going to take the profit for that day. And so we're always trying to figure out where are we going to go next and trying to get ahead of that. And that's part of the reaction today. The idea is that the market had been preparing for this signing. We've already worked prices down because of it. And we'll likely now, you know, I think try to balance out, like I say, you know, if and when does this deal fall apart? You know, how long does this take? And how much grain possibly could move here? As you mentioned, just because we get the deal signed doesn't mean that, boom, suddenly grain is flowing again. There's plenty of logistical issues still to be worked out here. And you're talking about, you know, this isn't just a two-way deal. As you mentioned, there are four parties within this deal: the Ukraine, Russia, the United Nations, and Turkey. And you need all four of those working in concert for this grain flow to really begin again.
Well, and we look as well, you know, just staying on the export theme, but shifting to the U.S., it seems like there's starting to be a little worry in the market trade of sagging export demand here in the U.S. for grains, corn, soybeans. I know wheat has had a couple good weeks here ahead of this signing of this deal, but I know there's some chatter around the trade that there's a little worry just how sluggish exports are getting, and one has to wonder if that's really the case or if we're just in that summertime kind of lull period for exports, Chad.
Well, I think we're also entering a period of time when we do tend to see a little bit of pickup in those, let's call it advanced sales on the new crop. And you're right. I think there is some concern there when we're looking at, you know, the export markets in general out of the U.S. You know, you think back to the WASD report recently where USDA ended up downgrading those export potential as we're looking to new crop. But at the same time, too, when, you know, I go back and I look at the weekly data that's showing us, when you look at those advanced sales, corn's running a little bit ahead of the five-year average in terms of sales into the international marketplace. Beans is actually right now at a record level when we're looking at where we're at this time of the year, looking at those new crop sales. But it's true that we also haven't seen a lot of additional movement in that data over the past few weeks. Now, I've been talking to farmers and telling them, from here till about, say, you know, mid-August is a period of time to really watch those numbers for those advanced sales, because this is when we tend to see those international buyers ramp up those purchases right before harvest here. And what they're looking to take advantage of is that this tends to be the time of year when we see some of those lowering prices because of the new crop coming down the line, and we can see usually how big that crop's going to be, leading to lower prices, leading for those buying opportunities for those international purchasers.
Well, and to that caveat, the caveat to that, as we watch this new crop now through the growing season, weather's the other big factor, Chad, and we've had this heat and dryness in the western Corn Belt here now for a couple of weeks. Sounding like as we get into next week, we're going to have a cooler and wetter forecast for many, and that's given us a little pause in the trade to pull back, although Friday's action in quarter beans maybe, you know, was a nice looking like a nice uptick into the weekend. But I look at this weather, the damage that's been done in the western Corn Belt. What are you hearing from farmers, especially west of the Missouri River? I know outside of Nebraska and maybe south parts of South Dakota, Kansas, not a huge corn state, but still plenty there. I mean, what are you hearing? Because I'm seeing and hearing just some pretty rough looking corn west of the Missouri River.
Oh, yeah. I mean, definitely when you think about, you know, you just have to look at the drought monitor. You can see that as you move west of Missouri River, you do see more substantial drought conditions definitely impacting the crops out there. And as you mentioned, though, the idea is that, you know, over the past few years, I would say the western side of the Corn Belt has been where we've seen more growth. But this is the year where we had some trouble planting out there. And so we did see acreage diminish this year in terms of that corn out there, but it's still highly drought stressed. But I'm going to tell you where I'm worried more is actually the eastern Corn Belt, especially as we're looking into eastern Illinois and the Indiana, where the drought conditions haven't been quite as strong. But the idea is you're talking about attacking a much more vital part of the corn and soybean production here in the U.S. And when we think about how these crops got planted this year, it was delayed. We have a much tighter window, if you will, that we planted into, which means as we pass through, like, you know, the tasseling and the pollination stages with the crops and that, you know, getting into the soybean flowering, the idea is that what you're looking at here is a crop that I would argue is more sensitive to weather than the usual crop. And so I think we will see more volatility around pricing because we're trying to figure out just how much damage is potentially being done, especially given our track record the past couple of years of we've had weather problems, but still very strong production when it came to especially corn and soybeans.
Well, I should throw in there parts of Missouri too have been pretty drought stressed, southern Missouri especially here lately, but it's a bit of a case of the haves and the have nots, right, Chad? We look at Iowa specifically. Other parts of Illinois, outside of what you mentioned, looking really good. Southern Minnesota, you look at that area, and especially Iowa into western Illinois, you know, that's usually that's corn country, and we know this, and that usually carries the national average yield. So you look at that area, I mean, we are starting to get dry, but from what I'm seeing and hearing, things are looking really good still, even with some of this heat stress coming in.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, you look at the good to excellent ratings that come out of the crop progress reports, and especially for Iowa, incredibly strong. You're right. I mean, you know, here I sit in Ames in the center part of the state. We're not under any sort of, you know, drought conditions as far as the drought monitor is concerned. But the idea is you see what's a beautiful crop, but you step out in the fields and you can see those drier soils underneath. And it gets worse as I move to Iowa's coast. As I move west or east, you can see that, as you mentioned, that the haves versus the have-nots. You can see where the rain has been and where it really hasn't. But the crop has held up, at least up to this point. You look at the national ratings, the national ratings are good. They're pretty much in line with what we saw last year. And last year was 177 bushels in beans and 50-plus bushels of on the soybean side. Or I'm sorry, yeah, 177 on the corn and, you know, plus 50 on the bean side. So we saw some, like I say, very strong crops last year with drought conditions in place. We're looking at the same potential setup this year.
That's Chad Hart with Iowa State University. We'll continue our discussion coming up after the break. Back with more Market Talk on the way right after this.
How many acres are you keeping an eye on? Another pair of eyes could be very helpful in protecting your ROI, especially ones that are highly trained. And that's what you'll get with an FS Crop Specialist. They can spot issues you might not even know you have using the latest technology, including thermal, drone, and NDVI imaging. Then they can get an early treatment plan started. Contact your local FS Crop Specialist to learn more about our crop scouting services. It's one more way FS is bringing you what's next.
The market news and analysis you need here on Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And welcome back to Market Talk. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. Thanks for joining us today. Chad Hart with Iowa State University, economist with ISU, joining us here on the program as we continue our conversation. Chad, looking at prices, you know, obviously I mentioned this earlier, we've taken a lot of the war premium off here. We've really kind of come back down in levels. You know, we're mid fives in corn on the board, you know, mid 13s on the board in soybeans here. Wheat, of course, has lost a lot. You take a look at just where levels are, some of the chart damage that has been done. Farmers looking at some of these lower price levels, maybe they're saying, oh, I didn't sell enough. It feels to me like this is maybe at least a point here where you maybe strongly consider, if you start to know what you have for a crop a little bit, to maybe lock some floors in possibly. It seems like now's the time in case we end up going lower for some reason, Chad.
Well, that's the, I look at it as it's a time to sort of reassess, but also think about, as you mentioned, looking to put in floors, but I want to give myself upside potential. And so this is a place where looking at things like put options and things make sense as far as protecting that downside, but leaving yourself some upside potential here. You're right that the risk premium has sort of dried up. The prices we're staring at today are eerily similar to where we started at the beginning of the year. So we've seen the bubble, you know, blow up and deflate over the course of the past several months. When I'm looking at the uncertainty, as we mentioned, with the international market, especially with what's happening in Ukraine, when I'm looking at the uncertainty we're seeing with the weather conditions, like I say, I want to leave that upside potential if I can, because I believe we will see some rallies as we're going forward throughout the fall and into the winter time, especially as things work their way out here. And so what do I want to do? Protect against further erosion on the prices. But like I say, leave some potential where I can price higher as we're moving forward. So looking at minimum price contracts or, like I say, the options in order to put in those price floors can make some sense now. But yeah, I want to leave that upside potential still there, because I think we've still got some room to play there.
Well, and on the flip side of that, if any producer feels like they've maybe oversold themselves on some new crop cash contracts, whatever the case may be, and they don't think they're going to have enough of a crop to cover themselves, I know they have some options to maybe get out, and maybe with prices coming down, they might even be able to get out of some of those cash contracts. I think it just remains to be seen, but I know there's a flip side to the story as well with some folks maybe in that position if they got a little too aggressive with their marketing this spring.
Yeah, I mean, that's, well, I would say this, whether it's a, you know, a high price year or a low price year, whenever you feel that you've gotten out in front of your skis a little bit there, yeah, you want to have those discussions early and not late, because you have more options as to how you deal with that. And I think for a lot of producers, I'm going to say that most of them probably put themselves in the position of they marketed you know, a lot of what they thought they had, hopefully, prior to now. But let's face it, I think the drought has held a lot of people up from getting out too far out there in terms of that pre-harvest marketing. So my guess is we don't have as many farmers as usual out there feeling that they've marketed too much. If anything, now they probably feel that they're probably sitting just right. But I would say this is also a period of time where, you know, especially as we move into August, like I say, you look at the seasonal pricing pattern, this is when we tend to see our lows here from, you know, late July into basically September. And then we start to see things rebound back up again. So now's a good time to sit back, evaluate where you're at, and think about post-harvest pricing moves you might make, allowing things to sort of settle out here with that uncertainty when we're looking at, you know, especially the price moves. You know, you think back over the past month, we've sort of been range bound a lot of cases. It's a wide range, but the idea is waiting for some of this uncertainty to be resolved.
Very true. Well, and then, you know, that's new crop. Old crop's a totally different story. If I have any old crop left, you know, man, I don't know. If you haven't sold it, you probably should. I know a lot of end users are getting their needs met here, and we're starting to see, you know, we've seen basis hold in well, but, you know, we're starting to see basis erode a little bit across the countryside, Chad.
We definitely are, and, you know, that's the deal. Yeah, I think with old crop, you're right that a lot of that ship has sailed. We know we need to clear out those bins, getting ready for the new crop coming in. And so, especially for those holding old crop still today, it may be the case of that, you know, that old strategy of go ahead and sell it today, but maybe put a call option out there to try to, again, give yourself some more upside potential as we look further down the road.
Chad, as well, inflation, of course, is another big topic that's been in the market trade. You know, we're waiting for next week for the Fed, presumably, to have another 75 basis point rate hike. We saw the European Central Bank with a 50 basis point rate hike earlier this week. So obviously, inflation playing into all of our markets, grains, livestock, everything, energies. But that's still something we have to watch closely as well. We can't forget about that.
It definitely is. And I would say that's part of the reason why there's that concern as we're looking at those export markets. Because this isn't just a U.S. problem. It is truly a global problem. We have seen these higher, especially energy prices, really weighing on consumer desires out there. And so until we basically see some, let's call it broad-based recovery on the energy side, I think we're going to be worried about inflation as we work through the rest of this year.
Well, let's segue into live cattle and feeder cattle here as we talk, Chad. We're speaking ahead of the release of the cattle on feed, cattle inventory report, and cold storage report Friday afternoon here. But, you know, I look at the cattle market specifically. There's a lot of folks who have a lot of optimism heading into the fourth quarter here with cattle, even though we're at some pretty elevated levels in both the fats and the feeders right now, Chad.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that is due to the thought that the reason we're at these elevated levels is because we have, if you will, pushed those cattle forward because of the drought conditions and the high feed costs. So that if you look at the first half here of 2022, we were looking at very strong production on the beef side, and we expect that to tail off as we move through the rest of this year into 2023. That's leading to, if you will, you know, a tightening outlook deeper as we go out there and higher cattle prices as we look deeper. And that's what the futures market's been reflecting here for the past several weeks.
Well, and I think as well, you know, we think about it and hear a lot about being friendly into the fourth quarter, but to me, it's another case of maybe getting some hedges in place in cattle if you haven't, and looking ahead, because, you know, we may not get those, that friendliness we want. And these are some pretty elevated levels, Chad.
They are. Anytime you're staring at a, you know, a $1.50 a pound out there on the fat, that's a pretty good price level to at least, you know, like, as you say, put in some floors to give ourselves some protection as we look out there. The other thing that's been striking to me, especially as we're talking about cattle and beef, has been that's the one place where we haven't seen any real export erosion yet. When I'm looking at beef exports, they're still chugging along at basically record levels right now. So international demand for beef remains very strong, even with the elevated prices we have right now.
Hog market real quick as well, Chad. This front month, these front month contracts, it's just been like a freight train. I mean, to me, I'm surprised we're continuing to stay up here, but I'm not going to get in front of this freight train as it continues to move forward here. This has been some impressive price action.
This has been some incredible price action. Yeah, I mean, if you're a pork producer, you wish you could bottle this and carry it forward. I think the problem, though, is, and this is what the futures market is sort of representing, is that we're short right now, but we know we're going to be long, especially as we get into the fourth quarter. And so you do see those prices, you know, a lot of air comes out of that balloon as we're looking deeper into 2022. And here's where I'll point out that difference in the export markets. I mentioned beef being at still record levels. Well, pork is well off those record levels, is actually slightly below the five-year average. And so we're not seeing that same sort of international demand spurt that we need to help maintain the pricing that we're seeing today.
Well, Chad, we're about out of time. I didn't even get to the energy markets or anything like that, but I will open it up to you. Floor is yours. Any other final thoughts? Anything else you want to reiterate for us here today?
Well, I do want to touch on the energy markets because I think they're the one of the biggest things that's going to shape what ag is going to look like over the next 6 months. And probably the most, let's call it, encouraging sign, if you're looking for lower energy prices, was that Nord Stream 1 did come back. You know, Russia did open it up a bit here. So as we see an easing in, you know, natural gas prices and gasoline and hopefully diesel prices down the road, that's going to help reduce some of that inflationary pressure we're worried about. And so that hopefully we can see consumer demand hold strong, and that will help create, let's call it, the possibility of a softer landing for the economy. And that's what we're all hoping to see as we look out there, especially as the Fed ratchets up that interest rate to get inflation under control.
Man, great stuff there. And I know as well, farmers watching closely, gas and diesel prices, propane prices getting into this fall as well, nat gas, a lot to watch there. And I think you hit it on the head. And that's going to be a big driver moving forward. Chad, always appreciate the time, sir. We are up against the clock, but thank you so much for joining me again and have a great weekend. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Thank you, sir. Have a good one.
And again, that is Chad Hart, economist at Iowa State University, joining us here today on Market Talk as we wrap up the week and look at all that news that's in the market trade, including that grain deal being signed between Ukraine, Russia, UN, and Turkey. In fact, it was two separate deals. It was Ukraine, UN, and Turkey, and then Russia, the UN, and Turkey signing joint deals, basically the same deal, just not signed by both parties on the same room. So just a lot of details there, but still an impact on the trade today, as well as the weather forecast heading into the weekend. So a lot of things to watch very closely. Coming up next, we're going to talk fertilizer. Josh Linville, Vice President of Fertilizer at StoneX. He will join us on the way next as we continue with more Market Talk right after this.
The market news and analysis you need here on Market Talk. Now back to Jesse Allen.
And joining us now here on Market Talk, Vice President of Fertilizer of StoneX, Josh Linville, is with us. Josh, great to catch up with you, sir. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing pretty well. Just enjoying the cooler Canadian temperatures. It's a lot better than the 100 degrees back in Kansas City.
Yeah, I was going to say, I know you were traveling this week up there in Canada for the Ag Emotion Conference, and we appreciate you taking a few minutes to join us here today. Josh, we got a lot going on in the world of fertilizer. I want to start with this case with the ITC rejecting this anti-dumping duty for Trinidad Tobago and Russian-produced UAN imports. And you know, I know this is a case that came as a surprise to many that it was rejected, and I know a lot of groups, a lot of farmers coming out and saying that it's going to be helpful for them. What is your take on this news that we got earlier this week, Josh?
Yeah, shocking is probably the radio version that we can put on here. What people had to say when they found out, a little more detailed, but yeah, it was a surprise to the system, right? This when you look at the history of these cases, it is not very often that you get to this point, the very end of the case, and get a no vote because they've gone through and they said, yes, we feel there's enough information here to look into it. We feel that, hey, there's enough information here to support these duty rates, which they did come up with, just to get to the very end and vote no. That is just not something that happens often. We had theorized, we thought there was a better chance, but still, if I'm being truthful, never fully expected this to happen. So what this ultimately means is that we now start having imports come back to the U.S. marketplace for UAN, coming back from Trinidad, coming back from Russia. Looking historically the last several years before this case was filed, those two countries alone accounted for about 80% of the UAN imports into the U.S. market. So you add those imports back in, and we're talking millions of tons. That's more competition.
Well,
so more competition is, you know, lower prices, hopefully.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. More competition hopefully equals lower prices. And here at Retail Fertilizer Trends, we've been seeing them continue to slowly tick their way lower the last couple of weeks. Talk about what you're seeing here in the U.S. right now when it comes to our fertilizer trends. What are you seeing at the Gulf? Are we going to continue to see the slow decline in prices, do you think?
Well, it's really, really tough to call. And I've been giving several presentations while I've been up here at the Ag in Motion conference. And one of my prevailing themes is that I don't know. And I'm not trying to do that to give a political answer and not give a firm idea. It's simply that a lot of these factors that I am really, really scared of are overseas. They are not based here in the U.S. They're not based here in North America. And not only are they overseas based, it has a lot of government intervention in it. So if we didn't have this international stuff going on, I'd be sitting here telling you, yes, very clearly, I believe prices are going to continue to go down. I'm fairly confident of it. There's no reason to panic.
Well, but, Josh, yeah, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, the one thing that I'm worried about on the nitrogen side, and the reason you won't hear me say a firm point of view, is I'm still worried about the European natural gas situation. If Russia decides to cut that further, or if prices continue to go up, we start seeing production plans go down over there, you will see a floor set in this this nitrogen sector's price very, very quickly, and probably start to see prices rally pretty hard afterwards.
Well, I know you mentioned Russia with that Nord Stream 1 pipeline. I know that they reopened it still at 40%, but that's a slippery slope if that gets cut back here. I would agree with you. There's a lot of worry there, especially as we start to head into this fall and we look at, you know, the potential out there that we might be drying quite a bit of this year's crop just to, if we're taking it out of the field early. So I know natural gas prices are going to be really top of mind and probably a concern for farmers here the next couple of months.
Fully agree. When you go over to Europe, when you put yourself, I always try to do this, put myself in the point of view of the person that's actually in charge of it. So put yourself in the shoes of Putin. The war is definitely not going like you thought it would. This thing is strung out. You're not exactly taking up ground like you thought you might. But you have figured out you have got a major weapon with this natural gas supply going to Europe. If you cut it back, you hurt the people. You hurt the people, you put pressure on the government. So you've got to believe he is looking at that just as much as we're sitting here talking about that today. And yeah, again, we're part of a world market. That is something that's going to affect us here at home because we're obviously going to be shipping product over there as an arbitrage opportunity, raising our pricing. You're absolutely right. The crop went in late. That's something we've been worried about more from a fertilizer standpoint because, you know, a late planting, does that mean a late harvest, which means a shorter fall application window? But yeah, a farmer's looking at it from the perspective of what's my gas going to cost me to dry this corn down?
Well, in a shorter fall application window, I saw a recent poll from DTN. They were asking farmers what their plans are for fertilizer. You know, with prices falling in recent weeks, were they going to buy soon? Were they going to wait? The top answer was, I'm not going to be purchasing fertilizer anytime soon. Are you hearing that same sentiment from farmers across the country right now? Are they waiting to see if prices come down further before they lock in some fall needs and even start thinking about spring of 2023?
There's a mix out there, but I would say the biggest group is that group that's in there saying, I'm going to sit, I'm going to wait and see what happens. There's some farmers that are saying today, I can purchase the fertilizer. I don't love the price, especially when I look at it versus the grain values. But I can still pencil it out next year at a profit I'm happy with. So I'm going to go ahead with it to make sure my product is sitting there when I'm ready to go. But a lot more are sitting there taking that approach. They're saying, I am going to continue to wait until the absolute last minute. And frankly, if that means I've got to switch from being a fall applicator to a spring applicator, so be it. Now, I would advise we need to think through the ramifications of that, because if enough of the market does it, that it is going to have an effect on pricing, right? That's going to hurt fall demand pretty substantially. Then we've got to pay for those sins. Now, so we got to worry about getting all this stuff done in the springtime, and that's a short window and can be made shorter by Mother Nature.
Well, Josh, great stuff as always. We appreciate you making some time to join us while you're busy up at the Ag in Motion Conference there in Canada, and we will let you go with that. Vice President of Fertilizer of StoneX, Josh Linville, thanks for joining us, my friend. Have a great one, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Thanks, man. Have a good one.
And again, that's Josh Linville, Vice President of Fertilizer at StoneX. Appreciate him joining us here today. That's all the time we have for Market Talk. Coming up on Monday, John Heimberg of Total Farm Marketing. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. Have a fantastic weekend. We'll talk to you on Monday with more Market Talk.
How many acres are you keeping an eye on? Another pair of eyes could be very helpful in protecting your ROI, especially ones that are highly trained. And that's what you'll get with an FS Crop Specialist. They can spot issues you might not even know you have using the latest technology, including thermal, drone, and NDVI imaging. Then they can get an early treatment plan started. Contact your local FS crop specialist to learn more about our crop scouting services. It's one more way FS is bringing you what's next.